Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bow tie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, stick to my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spill that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourselves down.
That's right, it's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here.
Nice to be here, Joe.
And we have a lot of things to talk about today, including my appearance on Air America Radio. But before we do that, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
J-O-E-V-E-C.
At okay, once again, I want to welcome all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. My thanks to Ben Birch for hosting my archives there. Also, my listeners at rantradio.com and radiopower.org and conjuringpictures.com and finally at cammafia.com, the site of my new show, Audio Hell. That's cam-mafia.com. Very good group of people there doing their best to run an internet radio station. A lot of different shows on there. I like doing the music, and that's why I decided to go with them. That's a two-hour show, Saturday from 4 to 6. And, of course, I am on Rant Radio on Sundays at midnight Eastern, which is 9 p.m. Pacific. And I think it's 3 o'clock on Thursday, or 6 o'clock Pacific time. No, 9 o'clock in the evening Eastern on Thursday. You'll have to excuse my voice. I am just getting over a cold, which I had over the weekend. In fact, I had it while I was on Air America, and I'll talk about that in just a second. And I've been debating about whether to do a show this Thursday or not, but then I thought I'd better put one together since I didn't have one on Sunday. Actually, with the new show and with, you know, things going the way they are at work and stuff, I've been considering dropping down to one show a week, but I know you guys probably wouldn't like that. So I will do my best to continue to do two shows a week. This is show number 40, by the way. And with this show, I eclipsed the number of shows that I was on with the Joey Jojo show. We stopped after number 39. In fact, I wanted to do a number 40, but things turned out otherwise. It's a long story, and I'm not saying it was Joey's fault that we didn't, because it wasn't Joey's fault. But that's another deal altogether. As I was saying, I was on Air America Radio this last Sunday. I didn't get anything out of it as far as hits are concerned. I don't think one person made a hit to me from Air America. I really don't know how many listeners they have from Sunday from 9 to 10. I mean, you got to figure that's a pretty late slot. So I don't know how many people were listening. My brother called me to tell me that he thought I'd done a pretty good job. I thought I did all right. The problem is a lot of these shows are very, very formulaic. I haven't been a guest on many radio shows beforehand, but I've been like in a TV studio where they were filming a show about the news, and it's all very formulaic, already pretty much put together. And, of course, Ms. Flanders is a professional who's been doing this for many, many years. So, and it was a little difficult to keep up, in part because I was doing the whole thing over the phone. And Sly Sylvester, his voice was so low I could hardly hear him. So I didn't know when he was talking. So if it sounded like I was talking over him, I'm sorry, but I absolutely could not hear him over the phone. It was very, very, very low. In fact, I had to turn off the small fan that I have here in the house just so I can hear him a little better. The lady on the show, I didn't have too much problems hearing her. And, you know, again, she's a professional. She's been around for a long time. But Ms. Flanders, of course, came through nice and clear. Now, I do have some clips on the show. There was one I have actually, I didn't record the whole thing because midway through it, the computer crashed. So I didn't get some of the segments that I wanted to get. They did have a very nice introduction for me, however.
Joe Vecchio is an internet radio host who's on twice a week. He works 40 hours, though, in manufacturing and is a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. His Cup of Joe show is coupled with his Blog of the Working Man.
They began the discussion talking a little bit about the 9/11 Commission and about some of the information that's been coming out of that.
What are people thinking? I mean, it looks to me as if the FTAA is going to come in for grief. The voices that you heard on those tapes this week were the voices of people trying to do their jobs in an impossible situation with rotten guidelines. They didn't know the rules. But are they going to be carrying a can, or do you think people get it, that these were just people caught in a tough spot?
Well, working people are always caught in a tough spot, and that's just the whole deal. With the FAA, basically what the administration did was put an extra layer of communication in there. And the people who were on the ground, on the air during the 9/11, were doing their jobs. They were communicating the issues, but it was going to the FAA and not to the people who needed to know it. And, of course, with the way the Bush administration talks and the way they lie about things, we'll probably never know the entire real truth about it. And that's the real sadness of this issue for me. And all the people who got killed in the World Trade Center and all the poor, innocent, working Iraqis, because, you know, Iraqi people are just regular working people, too. They suffer because of this.
The subject then went on to talk about Mr. Clinton and his upcoming book and how that would affect Senator Kerry.
Quick hits from our panelists. Do you think that this kind of revisit to the Clinton era will work for the Kerry campaign or against it? What do you say, Joe Vecchio?
Well, I really don't know how people have made up their mind about Kerry yet. I think there's a lot of people out there in the middle. The people have a real love-hate relationship with Mr. Clinton. I happen to think he did a great job as president. Yeah, he had some failings there, but not sort of thing you want to kick somebody out of office for. And I think it's obvious that the press really has a longing to get back into these nice, juicy sex scandals rather than talking about all this economic stuff and all this death and stuff in Iraq.
And a little later.
Think that the Bush campaign will have any success with their ads trying to blame Clinton for 9/11, Victoria?
With the people who already want to blame Clinton for the Second World War, yeah. But not with the others, because, I mean, the 9/11 Commission makes it very clear that both failed.
Look, can I break in for a second here?
Yeah.
Look, the Bush supporters are more like cult people.
Wait. Let's hear from Joe and then Sly. Joe, go for it.
I'm sorry. It was hard with all this going on here.
Yeah.
I think the Bush supporters are more like cult people. You know, it's really not so much a presidential administration as it is a cult of personality. And people will simply believe anything that Mr. Bush tells them. There are a group of people like that, a very large group of people like that. And I also want to say that I think Senator Kerry is running a very, very good campaign right now. He knows that the bad news is hurting Mr. Bush more than anything else, and he's getting a lot of free press out of that, or at least free negatives for Mr. Bush. And he knows that people aren't really paying attention yet. So he's just waiting for the right moment. He did that, I think, during the primaries, and very well, watching the other people fight amongst themselves.
If, by the way, I sound a little bit nervous, I probably was a little bit, but mostly it was just very difficult to keep track of the conversation. Everything else was moving so quickly. One of the things I like about doing a pre-recorded show is that I can stop and think about what I'm going to say, or even write it down, or at least a summary of it, so that I have an idea of what's going on. Anyway, the subject of Bush supporters continued.
What do you think, Joe Vecchio?
No, I think that at this point they kind of have to believe, because if
they come so far.
Yeah, if there's a big crack in the armor, it affects them personally. It's like, oh my God, how could I have fallen this? So they say, no, it has to be true. It has to be true. There was an Al Qaeda link with Saddam Hussein. It has to be true. And that, you know, that's the kind of mentality that you get after a while, even after everything that contradicts it. It's what they call a type A. type of deal, where
well,
you just refuse to...
Well, also, let me ask, Victoria, George Bush was all over the country this week talking...
The word I was reaching for, by the way, and for those of you who've listened to my show regularly, you know that sometimes a word that I need is stuck on my head and I can't get it to my tongue, is type A faith, which was talked about in James Randi's book about faith healing and about skepticism in general. And he talked about how some people exhibit a type of faith that no amount of evidence contrary to it will get someone to deny it. So even if facts were presented to them, they simply wouldn't believe it. That's a type A faith. Victoria Jones backed me up on that.
And I do agree with my colleague that, yeah, there are people who have come so far. But to step back now also means saying that I was completely and utterly, totally wrong for the last 4 years. How do I live with that?
That was very nice of Ms. Jones to back me up on that. And she's the host of a Good Day USA on 8 to 9:30 every morning. Well, every weekday morning, I assume. I don't think she works 7 days a week. At any rate, the topic finally moved on to the economy.
They did pass something called an American Jobs Creation Act. Were there any jobs in it? Joe Vecchio.
Well, of course not. If it's coming from the Bush administration, of course not. We've lost how many jobs since he took office? It's ridiculous. And working people are getting treated far worse now than they were 4 years ago. And it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad after Clinton got out. So things are not going to get better for working people under Mr. Bush, that's for sure.
Well, we are 48 Democrats supporting this, joining the Republicans to approve this Jobs Creation Act. Among Georgia's House members, only Democrat John Lewis of Atlanta opposed it. What about those Democrats?
Well, you know, they have their problems, too. I mean, I consider myself a member of the radical middle. I'm mainly a Democrat because I believe in, you know, what the party has done since 1932. But they've really strayed from the field as well very much. And if we're angry about it, and if you don't see that huge groundswell of support for Senator Kerry that you probably should, considering what's been going on, it's because people just don't trust it. Look, let's face it. These people make so much more money than we do. I mean, even the people in the media. I mean, 30, 40 years ago, the people in the media where people mostly got their reporting, they made basically the same as everybody else made. Not maybe a little more, but not that much. Nowadays, people get their news from TV, and you got politicians, and these people make more money than we'll ever see in, you know, in our lifetime. I mean, what are you talking about? Dick Cheney making $200,000 a month from a retirement plan? That's ridiculous. That's absolutely outrageous. So when people see these jobs creation things, and they look at all the pandering that's going on with all the pork that's happening, they know that they're not going to get anything out of it. When somebody passes a bill where I can see my tax rate go down from like 25-26%, to like 5-10% where it really should be, and the people up at the top getting taxed more and getting rid of their loopholes, and you see a real improvement in the pay, then you'll see people start paying attention. But I wouldn't, you know, if this administration said 1 + 1 = 2, I'd start looking at my math book to double check.
We talked about how the Bush supporters are going to be using the beheadings of American and other countries' civilians to their advantage.
People are being beheaded. Vote Bush. Think it'll work? Joe
Vecchio. With the Bush supporters, it certainly will, because they'll believe anything that they're told. Quite frankly, I think our behavior has been just as barbaric. I mean, we haven't been beheading people, but we've been shoving things up their rear ends, and we've been parading them around like dogs and cutting them and biting them with dogs and stuff like that. We're no better in that sense, and it's a shame, because we're supposed to be better. And I was brought up thinking we were better.
I would say that there is a distinction between beheading people and what you've described, but I'm with you in the broad scheme of things.
And we finished up with a very, very quick discussion about how the Catholic Church has been moving people around who have been accused of pedophilia.
It's, I've got the power, I can do it.
Well, this
I've got the power, I can abuse it. Joe.
I was going to say, this is from the same people who want to deny communion to Senator Kerry and others because they're not pro-abortion, but pro-choice. I mean, it's just outrageous. I mean, I grew up Catholic, and Catholicism tends to breed a lot of agnostics, if you know what I mean.
Well, you got to rebel. You got to rebel. I want to thank you all. Sly Sylvester, you can find him on the personalities page at WTDY.com. Joe Vecchio. Check out his cupofjoe.blogspot.com. And Victoria Jones, managing editor of the Radio American Network. You can hear her weekdays on Good Day USA. We'll be back next Saturday and Sunday. Have a fantastic.
So anyway, it was nice being on the show, and I think you can tell by listening to me that I really wasn't in the same category with those people yet. I mean, they're all very much veterans of the radio scene, and they're used to talking constantly about different subjects. And I'm still pretty new to this. I've only been doing this for a few months. And, of course, I don't have an audience, and I'm not used to a big formula. I just basically record the show when I can. But it was nice being on. Hopefully they'll give me a chance to come on another time. I honestly doubt it. I mean, I'm just a little guy. I'm very small on the totem pole here, but I know I've got my loyal fans out there, and I thank you all for listening to this show. And I hope that maybe it will lead to something, but we'll see. I get a little nervous talking like that. And like I said, I like to pre-prepare things. I like to be a little bit more in control. But like I said, I'm still new, and these guys are all well-educated, trained professionals, and I'm just a guy with a mic. Anyway, let's take a quick little break, and we'll be back shortly with more of the Cup of Joe radio show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, stick your head out and yell, I'm tired of hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Politics, humor, tequila, and an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Art Cop Radio.
Hi, my name is Bart. You're listening to Bart Cop Radio, often heard on BartCop.com. America's future is far from over. In fact, the real battle is just beginning. You see, the liberals are retrenching. Are we retrenching? If I was online, I'd look that up, see what the hell it means. And now they're hungrier than ever to undermine President Bush and his agenda for a better, more prosperous America. Just consider this quote from a prominent liberal activist. Notice he's not going to put a name on it. This could be anybody. It's by a prominent liberal activist. Here's the quote. Now the president is out of control and threatens American democracy and the peace of the world. Bush must be beaten in 2004, not only for the nation, but the world depends on it. Well, everybody agrees with that. That's why I'm asking you to stand up. Stand up is capitalized. For America's future, by becoming a sustaining member, also capitalized, of the Republican National Committee, RNC. Oh, I didn't know what that meant. Today, your pledge to support. Here we go, some more underlining. Along with a membership contribution of $25, $35, $50, $100 or more, will help President Bush enact his agenda for a stronger, safer, and better America. And the reason he says that is because the liberals want a weaker, more dangerous, and worse America. See, there's two camps. There's two ways to go. You can go with the stronger, safer, and better. You can go with the weaker, more dangerous, and worse. As a sustaining member, you'll be entitled to a number of benefits, which I'll describe for you in a moment. We'll describe them now. The pride of knowing that you're part of a team fighting for a better future for all Americans, especially the white, rich ones. While President Bush has already passed two of the largest tax cuts in history, sparked the fastest pace of economic growth in nearly 20 years, yep, back to the last recession that you guys caused, passed a historic Medicare prescription drug bill, and led our country courageously. Oh, the courage! Wait, it was tremendously courageous a while ago, and now it's just courageous. Did he lose some courage in three paragraphs? In the war on terror, we must all continue to fight for America's future, yes. And as a sustaining member of the RNC, you'll be doing your part to help Bush further his agenda to strengthen the economy, secure our homeland, safeguard Social Security, and then win the war on terrorism. He's going to safeguard Social Security? By stealing all the money? Hello, Mr. Bank Officer. I'm here to secure the bank. This is a holdup. I have a gun in my hand. Give me all your money so I can secure you. We've done so much in the past year. I know you're as proud about what we've accomplished as I am. But now is not the time to rest. No, the time to rest is just before 9/11. That's the time to rest. This monkey is on vacation 40% of the time. And now they're saying it's not the time to rest. No, we only rest when the terrorists are coming. It's the time to build and decision. And the decision is underlined, you must make is simply this. We stand up now. Okay, hold on. I'm standing up and fight for the future of America. Yes, I do that about 10, 12 hours a day. I hope that your answer is yes. Yes! And you will join the RNC. No! Your show of support and generous membership donation of 25, 35, 50, 100 or more will be a strong statement of personal support and a pledge of commitment to the future of our country. See, I should use these kind of tactics. If you want a better America, send 25, 35, 50, 100 or more to Barkoff.com. Oh, the pride you're going to feel, it will make your shoes squeak. By standing up, does that mean I can sit back down? And joining the RNC today, you'll be doing your part to fight for opportunity. Opportunity for yourself, opportunity for every white rich man in America. You see, President Bush has a bright, bold vision. Oh, it kills me. One of unity and common purpose, which draws strength from the timeless American principles of empowerment, independence, individual liberty, and free enterprise. You know, I'm thinking this is an election year. Whenever Bush talks about doing things for the little guy, you know, he's going to put his hand on Negro children. Bush wants you to be able to chart your own course in life, empowered, underlined, to take your own risk and succeed rather than be caught in a web of government dependence, says the man who grew the government 30% since he got in there. He wants every child to have the opportunity, underlined, to succeed. But the liberals don't agree with President Bush. They want bigger government. No. You have enlarged the government. We didn't do that. Bill Clinton shrunk the government. The nutty monkey grew the government. These are facts. They cannot be denied. The CBO will back me up 100%. They will not back you up, Mr. Gillespie. They want bigger government, higher taxes, less personal responsibility. No, that's you guys. You guys are sending Ashcroft out to poor guy out in Oregon or Northern California. Got cancer, can't keep food down. So he smokes a joint. Ashcroft and his goons kick in the doors. That's personal responsibility? Why don't you get the F off our back, Mr. Ashcroft? Why don't you let us exist without your interference? That would be nice. And now they're more determined than ever to take total control. Total control and big capital letters. The liberals going to take total control of the federal government in 2004. Gee, we hope so. Make no mistake. The liberals will stop at nothing. How come you guys didn't underline nothing? To undermine President Bush and his agenda for a better America because the liberals want a worse America. This is why I must. Why didn't you underline must? Have your support today. Please take a moment right now, big capital letters, to return the enclosed RNC membership acceptance reply. Wait, you want that or you want the check? Your pledge of support, along with a generous membership donation of $25, $35, $50, $100 or more, will help President Bush further his agenda to revitalize the economy, parentheses, that he ruined, secure a homeland, parentheses, that he almost destroyed with his, had to go to Crawford and talk to the cows. No time to mess with Al-Qaeda. I got cow talking to do. Safeguard Social Security, which he has raped, robbed, shot in the head, driven out of town in the trunk, and buried in a shallow grave near a bridge. Win the war on terror that he effing started. His old man put the troops in Saudi Arabia that pissed off bin Laden that caused 9/11 that Bush went to sleep for. Don't tell us about how you're going to protect us.
Hi, kids. George Lowe, voice of TV's beloved Space Ghost. You are barking a happy tune with my close personal friend, the lovely Joe Vecchio, on the Cup O' Joe radio show.
And welcome back to the Cup O' Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. And my email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. Drop me a note. Let me know what you think of the show. And also drop a note in the comments. section of the blog. You don't have to leave your name or anything, and we have a couple of trollers in there, although we do have those who know, who we know they're not really trollers, they're right-wingers, but they post anyway. Mr. Beachon, my old sparring partner, posts there, but he's insane, so I never pay any attention to what he says. No, he's not insane. He's just deranged, deluded, like all the members of the cult-like right wing of this country. Cult-like. That's a good word. I brought that up on Air America. You know, I really, listening back on that, I sound so less professional than everybody else there. And really, I'm not professional. I'm just a guy with a microphone. You know, I mean, I'm getting there. I'm better than I was previously, but I still have a long way to go if I want to be like a regular guest on those. But those guys are so formulaic, and, you know, Laura didn't call me and talk to me beforehand, and we didn't have an opportunity for me to get just comfortable. It was just kind of me in there. And plus, like I mentioned, it was very, very difficult for me to hear what was being said, particularly by Sly, who was coming in very, very low. That last clip was from my friend Bart Cop, by the way, bartcop.com, bartcop.com, and he's been doing this for a lot longer than I. He didn't call himself a blogger, but he's been writing a daily page for many, many years. He's very emotional. He's very much like me. He's just a working class stiff, trying to do his best to vent his anger. His radio show is a pay radio show. You have to pay to listen to it. But if you have a few extra dollars to spare, you're certainly welcome to subscribe to it. And I certainly urge you to, if you do have. Even if you never listen to the show, subscribe just to help out one of your fellow members on the left. My voice was going. I didn't do a show on Thursday night. This is Thursday's show, and it is right now Friday evening at 11:50, and the reason why I'm not at work is because I've been having some medical things taken care of, and my throat is part of that. But I had a sore throat all through the Air America Radio thing. I had a really nasty sore throat because I was just getting over the cold, and I was angry at that because I thought it was my big chance, and here I have a cold. So I don't know if they're going to ask me back or not. We'll find out. But certainly, if they were to call me tonight and say, "Do you want to be on tonight?" I'd be in a much better position to be on the air tonight. But I had a sore throat, and I've had problems with my throat for quite some time, and until recently I haven't had medical benefits. And this is one of the things that working people have to put up, especially the working poor, have to put up with for a long time, and that's just not having medical benefits. But I do have them now with my company. And I went to the doctors on Monday, and they set me up for an appointment with what they call diagnostic imaging, which is the fancy way for saying x-ray. Well, it is a little bit more than an x-ray because they can take video as well. And I'm having some problems with my digestion. So I went in there, and they basically made me drink this crap called barium, which coats the inside of your insides. And then they can x-ray it and see what's going on in there. And they had me drink a cup of this crap, maybe about 16 ounces, and it's just awful. It's like a milkshake with chalk in it, and it doesn't taste like a milkshake. It's very thick and creamy, and it tastes awful. But I had to drink a whole cup of that and then wait while it ran its way through my system. And it was tough on me because I have a difficult time with that. They're making me take pills now, and I'm not used to taking pills. I've got three different pills that I'm taking, and one of them is this big fucker. This is 500 milligrams, and it's just huge. My wife calls it a horse pill, and I always have trouble taking pills, but I think I finally got it down where I can actually do it now, not too difficult, without throwing it up. But I went down there today, and I got all that taken care of, and it's nasty, but you know, it's something that I need to take care of because I can't go around being sick. I wish more people had the opportunity to get health care. You know, President Clinton's got his autobiography out, and he said on the 60 Minutes interview that he thinks his biggest disappointment, one of his biggest disappointments, was not getting the health care passed. And it would have made so much of a difference to so many people. And I really like what Governor Dean said about health care. He said, the problem is that we're having this argument about health care while people are still not covered. Let's go ahead and let's just do something to get everybody covered. You know, like make Medicaid and Medicare available to people under a certain poverty level. you know, at a certain economic level, and then we can argue about what kind of system we're eventually going to have, because this way at least people are covered and people can get medical care without worrying about going into the poorhouse. My wife is taking advantage of Medicaid for as long as she possibly can, and she has many, many more illnesses than I do, a lot of them brought out by the chemotherapy, excuse me, that she had when she had cancer. My wife is a cancer survivor, and she actually is officially cured because she is out of remission. It takes, I think, 5 years to get out of remission, so congratulations to her. Fortunately, she had a very mild form of breast cancer that they caught very, very quickly. But they've got me taking pills now. I'm trying to cut down on my blood sugar, and they've actually got me checking my blood count, or my blood sugar count every day, and I got to keep track of it in a little book there. And I'm trying to get it down. I'm supposed to get it down to below 120 or something like that. My last test was 137, which doesn't sound so great, but it's a lot better than the 188 it was a couple of days ago. So maybe the pills are working. Maybe it's because I'm having to cut out a lot of foods that I really, really like, and a lot of starch mainly. I'm having to cut out a lot of starch. But anyway, you all don't want to hear that. Maybe you do. I don't give a shit. It's my fucking show. I'll talk about what I want about. There was an article in the New York Times on the 22nd. Today is the 25th as I speak. It's almost midnight, so it's almost the 26th. But it's by Benedict Carey, and it's called Fear in the Workplace, the Bullying Boss. And I know everybody out there who's listening, who works for a living like I do, deals with bosses who are bullies. And I'm going to quote some of the article here. It starts out saying, every working adult has known one. A boss who loves making subordinates squirm, whose moods radiate through the office, sending workers scurrying for cover, whose very voice causes stomach muscles to clench and pulses to quicken. It's not long before dissatisfaction spreads, rivalry simmer, psychopaths flourish. Normally self-confident professionals can dissolve into quivering bundles of neuroses. Researchers have long been interested in the bullies of the playground, exploring what drives them and what effects they have on other victims. Only recently have investigators turned their attention to the bullies of the workplace. Now, back to me. This is not their quote. This is me. I've had to deal with this situation for a long time, from many different places. I mean, I complain about my company, Siemens, and, you know, rightfully so to a certain extent. They are a very good company, and I do, you know, I am proud that I work for them, even though I work for what we refer to as the armpit of the Siemens. But they do have a problem when it comes to hiring supervisors, and we talk about this quite a lot at work, about which supervisors are competent and which supervisors aren't. I don't necessarily mind a supervisor being a bully. You know, sometimes you have to use a little bit of force and a little bit of personal intimidation to get your way. It's part of what being a manager is sometimes. Your job is to get certain things done. The problem is that there are a lot of managers and a lot of supervisors out there who think that this is the only way you deal with people, and that's the way you have to deal with everybody. And some of them take a lot of personal satisfaction in the power. Now, according to the article, a manager might use bullying to swat down a threatening subordinate, for example, said Dr. Harvey Hornstein, a retired professor from Teachers College at Columbia University and the author of Brutal Bosses and Their Prey. Hornstein. I'm sorry, that's just a funny name. Or a manager might be looking for a scapegoat to carry the department or the supervisor's frustrations. But most often, Dr. Hornstein found, managers bullied subordinates for the sheer pleasure of exercising power. According to Dr. Hornstein, it was a kind of low-grade sadism. That was the most common reason. They'd start on one person and then move on to something else. And again, I'm sure if you work for a living, you all know exactly what he's talking about. I mean, you don't need a scientific study for that. This is something that they do scientific studies for, and I'm like, why? You know, people are mean. People abuse their power. And if you look at the Bush administration and how it runs things, it's got that mentality. It's got that attitude. We define what reality is. And you go along with it, or we swat you down. And bullying and intimidation are the only tools that they know and understand. You know, it's the military is like that, too. When you go to basic training, the primary way they have of motivating you is fear and humiliation. Those are their primary methods. And they really don't have they don't have the idea of treating everybody differently. Because I guess in that situation, you really, really can't. But, of course, the workplace isn't the military. And there are people who just enjoy power for the sake of enjoying power. And again, I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with that if it weren't for the fact that they mix that with incompetence. How many of you know how incompetent your boss is? How many of you are aware of it, of the level of it? And why do you think the bosses got their job? What are the reasons that they were hired as your boss if your boss is a middle manager? You know, because where I work in Siemens, for example, since it's a big manufacturing plant, my supervisor has a supervisor who has a supervisor who has other supervisors. I mean, it's a fairly big operation. But in some cases, your boss may be the owner of the shop that you work in. I mean, that's all quite possible if you work for a smaller organization. I've worked for that when I worked for small print shops where the boss was the owner. You know, but the incredible thing is, according to the article, and this is interesting, that the mystifying thing about this pattern is that it does not appear to undercut productivity. Workers may hate a bullying boss and hate going to work each morning, but they still perform. Researchers find little relationship between people's attitudes towards their jobs and their productivity as measured by the output and even the quality of their work. Even in the most hostile work environments, conscientious people keep doing the work they are paid for. And I'm like that. Even though I know the boss is an idiot, I'll go out and still do the best job that I can. And people do that more as a matter of personal pride, I think. They say, I don't care how screwed up the boss is. I'm going to do my job. But, of course, bad bosses do lead to tensions. I talked about this a few shows ago when I almost got into a fight with the forklift driver because we didn't have enough cardboard. We didn't have the tools that we needed to do our job. And because my job became more stressful, you know, I was starting to ask for help. And the other guy, you know, was like, you know, screw you. You can't keep up. And that's all part of a manager's deal. That's all part of a manager's problem because he was the one who created the situation in the first place. And some managers like it when they have co-workers turn on each other because it distracts them from who the real enemy is. And you really shouldn't even think of the person as an enemy because they're your boss. They shouldn't be your enemy. You should all be part of a team, right? But it's all a power play. And when you have a boss like that's dealing with these type of power plays, then he's going to do things like that, these little manipulative things to turn people against each other so that they don't realize that the problem is with the boss. Now, as I said all along with my boss currently where I work and with other places too, look, the problem isn't that you should fire them and you shouldn't fire them. You should train them. The problem is that these people who hired the supervisor in the first place, this is what they're looking for. They're looking for someone to bully and push people around. And again, I don't necessarily have a problem with that as long as they're competent. But the intimidation factor seems to be the primary reason that people get hired for these positions. And I hate to say this because I'm a proud member of the union, but I went to a union meeting the other day. In fact, it was the first union meeting I'd actually was able to attend because I hadn't had a car, and without a car, getting around is a real, real pain in the butt, and that's another story for another day. But I attended a meeting, and they were just talking about the usual stuff, and I asked about the layoff because there's still a question of whether anybody's going to get laid off. And now that I've switched to this new area in my workplace, there's a possibility that I might get laid off. But you know what? If they lay me off, they lay me off. I don't fucking care anymore. I get unemployment, and I'll go around looking for another work, or maybe I'll find some way to build this little operation here into a moneymaker. But at any rate, I went to the meeting, and I had asked a question about that, but I was also talking about some of the events and things going on the paint line. And I talked about, you know, because the front line, and again, for those of you who never listened to the show before, I work on what they call a paint line, where metal parts are hung on hooks and taken on a big overhead conveyor belt, dumped into a big vat of paint, painted and dried and, you know, sent back out. And my former job was to pull the stuff off the paint line. Now, these conveyor belts are like, you know, 25 years old. And they're not in the best of shape, but of course the supervisor looking for numbers doesn't care about that. They'll keep throwing parts upon parts upon parts and heavy parts and lots of them, and eventually the line breaks and it was down for an entire week. And I brought this up to the people at the union, let them listen. Every day that thing is down, that's 30,000 parts that will not come off the line. That's in 1 week, that's 150,000 parts. That's a rather significant chunk of money for the company. And, you know, they said they talk about it, you know. And I talked about, you know, how nobody speaks for anybody on the paint line and how difficult the job is. And the union leaders that were there, and it wasn't, you know, we're not talking about a big, big meeting. There were only maybe 10 or 15 people in the audience and three of the union people, all women, actually. All women are union leaders in that sense, the big names anyway. And but their attitude towards someone like me who's new and, you know, and all that stuff is like, you know, yeah, whatever. You know, they said they did say they would look into it and see what's going on, and it's one of those I'll wait and see type of deals. But, you know, their attitude towards anybody, it seems, that says something that they're a little uncomfortable with or that they think is an unusual question is just kind of a little mock ridicule attitude. You know, it's, yeah, you know, don't worry, dearie, I get you. We understand. You're here, you know. I'm just, you know, trying to make a point. You know, and I'm not the most diplomatic person in the world, damn it. And that's one of my failings, I know. I just go off and I say shit. And that's the way I am. You know, it's like being on Air America Radio. I just say shit. And I'm not as smooth and well-practiced as all these other people. And I just have things on my mind. And I take a very practical, radical middle view on things. This is a problem. Let's fix it. Now, the other day at work, back to bosses and stuff, we had a situation where, well, it's not really about bosses, but it does go into the whole workplace thing. Now, we had a situation, and if you work in manufacturing, like I do, you may understand this and you may recognize this as something that happens to you fairly often. But we had a situation where we were building something, we were putting together a circuit box, and we discovered 88 boxes in that one of the parts was wrong. So we had to drop everything, go back and redo all of those parts. And I saw what was going on. Everybody was just kind of running around, you know, like a chicken with his head cut off. And the supervisors were busy trying to help out, you know, get the stuff out of the boxes and put the right part in. And I saw something that needed to be done. There were some boxes on a pallet. I told Rico, who's the forklift guy for that, I said, get a forklift. Let's grab these and put these over here where the front of the line is so we can unbox them over there and load them up on the line and just run it like a regular production line. You know, and he was, fortunately, Rico was not the kind of guy who took stuff like that personally, because when I get in that mode, I can get a little bit bossy. And I apologize to him about it, because this is the way I am. I have a sergeant's mindset. I have a supervisor's mindset, even though I'm a regular worker. If I see a situation where something needs to be done, you know, I start talking and I say, let's get this thing doing. Let's move it. You know, unless somebody comes along and contradicts me, I'm going to keep doing that. You know, somebody with real authority. But that's my mindset. And thankfully, Rico didn't take that personally. And you have a lot of situations where people do take that stuff personally. They don't like to be bossed around. They don't want to be bossed around. You know, and they certainly don't like to be bossed around by some new guy coming in. I mean, how long have I been at that shop? 6 months? You know, Rico's been there longer than I have. And there are people who have been there for freaking 25, 35 years. Because I wouldn't speak that way to them in that sense. But again, it was a situation where I saw that something needed to be done, and I immediately set out giving orders. Not that it means I didn't do anything, because I did do it. I was helping out unload all the boxes and stuff like that. I just wanted to get them in the right position so that we could do that. I wish a lot of the supervisors at our plant would be more like-minded. And again, there's nothing wrong with being bullying so long as you're competent. And I think the problem that we have with a lot of our supervisors is not so much that they're bullies, but that they're incompetent bullies. You know, and I expect and I assume that the person who is above me is more intelligent and more knowledgeable than I am about the job at hand. And, of course, that's exactly the way I feel about the Bush administration and the war on terror and the war on Iraq. I don't mind if you're a bunch of warmongering cocksuckers. At least be competent warmongering cocksuckers. We could put up with you a lot better. And have an understanding that there are people who exist other than you and your little friends. If you were really willing to even going around the law and doing all that bullshit, if you were really going to do anything to help the Iraqi people and help just other people, not be, you know, super rich and all that, but just be able to know that we have enough money to live our lives in comfort and not have to worry about poverty and, you know, little things like healthcare. If you took care of us to that extent, we don't give a shit about the games that you guys play up there. I mean, the peasants in France were willing to put up with a lot of shit from the nobility because, you know, they really didn't care. The nobility's lives were the nobility's lives, and the peasants' lives were the peasants' life. And so long as they were reasonably taken care of, then they were okay. But, of course, the nobility went too far, and they pushed everyone over the edge. And just like the corporate leadership and the political slash corporate leadership of this country is pushing everybody over the edge because they're basically a bunch of bullying bosses who are incompetent. Anyway, let's hear from our friends at BuzzFlesh.com. Sam, play us out.
The Papa Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Welcome to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. The Gipper has landed. Last weekend, Ronald Reagan was finally put to rest. He must have been tired. For a week, his body was flown around the country in a funeral extravaganza that was breathlessly covered like a miniseries by the media. And that's just the way the B-actor wanted it. For Ronnie and Nancy, life was about performance, not results. They were creatures of Hollywood, a world of fantasy where the goal is to never have reality intrude onto the silver screen. And that's how Reagan dealt with reality as president. He just ignored it. Armed with an arsenal of Hollywood cliches and teleprompter poise, the B-film star, groomed and financed by ultra-right-wing millionaires, finally found his A-role when he was elected president of the United States. Make no mistake about it, for 8 years America had an upbeat, affable man who acted in the role of a lifetime. Without a script to read, Reagan was as clueless or indifferent to what was happening in the White House as, say, George W. Bush. And the press couldn't heap enough praise and adulation on the Gipper, whose slogan, "Win one for the Gipper," came from one of his movies. After all, Reagan was the man of the moment. An actor who arrived in Washington at a time when the merger of news and entertainment was just beginning to gel. And gel it did, with Kodak perfect visual backgrounds almost always including a sea of American flags, and endless personal anecdotes, the media knelt, as one critic recalled, on bended knee. They weren't in awe of Reagan's public policy results, they were in awe of the mastery of the image he projected. It was the end of responsible, civic-minded journalism and the beginning of govertainment. Reagan was really just a Hollywood Trojan horse for the fringe right wing whose real interest was the financial realignment of America to benefit the ultra-rich. The Reagan team masterfully appealed to the feelings of victimized displacement felt by many white males. You just knew in your heart that when Reagan referred to that shining city on the hill, there wasn't going to be a lot of room up there for people of color, emancipated women, and gays. In 1980, Reagan's people ran a sunny, optimistic series of commercials with the slogan, "It's Morning in America." By the end of Reagan's second term, after Iran-Contra, a multi-trillion dollar deficit, the murders of thousands of people in Central America, a rise in U.S. crime, the ballooning of the AIDS epidemic, the crash of the stock market, the deaths of Marines in a failed Mideast mission, and much, much more, morning in America had turned into a nightmare. But through all the debacles, failures, lies, deceptions, and betrayals, Reagan would be there beaming away, exuding a boundless optimism belied by the dark underside of his administration. As the daffy, illegal, morally bankrupt Iran-Contra scandal began to emerge, Reagan flat out lied. "We did not, repeat, did not trade weapons or anything else for hostages, nor will we," he said. Later, He ate his words in a vague non-apology apology for the whole affair. But if justice had run its course, Reagan would have been impeached. Even the Democrats at the time, however, shied away from taking on the media star power of the Gipper. Reagan, in many ways, is the GOP hypocrite in chief. He showed that if you conveyed the image of an optimistic, family values, white male Republican, studied your script, and played your role to the hilt, it didn't matter how ruinous your actual policies were or how dysfunctional your own family was. He blazed the trail for GOP office holders to be judged by how they act the role of president, rather than being judged by the ruinous realities of their extremist programs and the realities of their personal lives. No, Ronald Reagan never stopped smiling as he helped the wealthy class pick the pockets of the working men and women of America and the nation's poor. He never stopped being upbeat as nearly 200 Reagan-era officials faced investigation and prosecution. In short, he never stopped being the consummate GOP hypocrite. Until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
Radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and my email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And thanks again to Ben Birch for hosting my archives at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. And thank you to all my fans listening in at rantradio.com, on radiopower.org, and for my new show, Audio Hell, on cammafia.com. That's cam-mafia.com. My wife just came in, and she was very upset. She was talking to her sister Jennifer, and her sister Jennifer is married to a guy who is a truck driver. And this is one of those problems that we working people face in America, that because we're living paycheck to paycheck and we can never make enough money to save, no matter how hard we friggin' work, and you wonder why people play the lottery all the time. It's because they know that they're never going to get anywhere on the crappy salaries that they have. But anyway, her husband Steve is a truck driver, and he got a ticket, which he couldn't afford to pay, and he asked the company to give him a little help for that, and of course the company refused. Their attitude was that once the truck is out of the shop, you know, then it's his responsibility, which is probably a true thing. I don't know that much about trucking, but if I'm not mistaken, some of them own their own truck. Well, being a truck driver, he's on the road a lot, so he didn't really have the opportunity to get the situation taken care of with the ticket. And while he was in Ohio, excuse me, while he was in Ohio, let me get a drink of water here. Sorry about that. Professional radio. While he was in Ohio, and he lives in California, keep that in mind, he had his license revoked. And he's stuck in Ohio with, like, no money, no way to get home. And, of course, now that he's got no license, he can't work, which means there's no way his family can pay the bills. And again, just like a lot of other people, this couple is living paycheck to paycheck. So I really don't know what to say. My wife is furious, you know, because her sister's in trouble and there's nothing she can do to help. I certainly don't have a lot of money. I don't know how much it would cost to take to get this guy from Ohio to California. So I don't know what the hell to do. You know, it's one of those situations where I wish I had a fucking magic wand and can just make it all right, but I can't because I'm stuck where I'm at. And I'm living paycheck to paycheck, and I'm just, you know, I've barely got the rent caught up as it is. But, you know, that's just neither here nor there. So, I don't know what to say. If any of you out there has any ideas, email them to me, joevec@bellsouth.net. Although, by the time you do so, the situation will have resolved itself. I just really don't know. You know, when I talk about doing the paycheck to paycheck thing and all this other stuff, and what I like to do. And we only really have a few minutes for this segment because I was running longer than the other ones, which is cool because, you know, that means I don't have to talk quite so much now. It's been a real... God, as you can tell, my throat is still kind of recovering from the cold I had last week. And that's what prevented me from getting the show together on Thursday. Also, the fact that I have very little time. I might have been able to drag a show together if I was doing this full time. But the fact that I have to go to work and that I only have a limited time to put the things together means that if something comes along and disrupts that, like the cold, then I really can't do that. What I really need, if I want to take the show to the next level, what I need is a couple of people to help me out who live here in the Atlanta area. They have to live in the Atlanta area. That's a given because we got to have a situation where we can work and meet face-to-face. So if you're listening to the show and you live in the Atlanta area and you want to help out, please email me, joevec@bellsouth.net, joevec@bellsouth.net. Email me, talk to me, and I'll, you know, we'll try to get together, we'll arrange a meeting or something like that. This is what I basically need. I need someone who's going to act as a producer, basically someone who will help out with the drops and the intros and help me find subjects to talk about and actually come on the show and, you know, talk to me and, you know, be someone I bounce off. Kind of like that lady on the Howard Stern show, the, what is her name, Robin, the nice black lady that's on it, that's his producer. And also, I'd like to get one more person to help us do a little research and stuff like that. You know, and I bitch about this all the time, but it really is true. I do this show by myself. And if I want to take it to the next level, what you're selling to a station is not just a host, but a whole team. And if I'm going to make this a more regular gig where people can make more money, I mean, producers make very good money, and even a research assistant is going to make a decent amount of dough. And, of course, the host doesn't do too badly himself. Then if you have a good working relationship like that, then, you can put something together and have a better chance. I mean, I've got a track record here. This is show number 40, which actually eclipses, by the way, the number of shows that I did with the Joey JoJo show with Joey Davis. And, you know, one of the things that was nice about that show was having someone to talk to. And someone to mold, bounce ideas off of him back and back. Even though Joey could be a little bit more confrontational than I liked, the fact of the matter is that when you can talk to someone like that, the show just goes that much smoother. I do have some interviews in mind. I'm trying to get some celebrities. I'm actually going to try to get Bill Clinton, President Clinton, to be on the show, but the odds against that are pretty wild. But you never know. You know, when you try something, you never know. And Mr. Clinton grew up in a working-class environment, and he worked his way out of that to the highest office in the land, truly the American dream in that sense. And, of course, the Republican Party had to trash him for that and call him un-American and call him all sorts of crap. But we know how these people are. They're just a bunch of assholes anyway. But, I'm really hoping that I can get a couple of people. We had a guy who got started, but then he just kind of went off. And it was not his own fault, but his own deal because his wife just had a baby. So if any of you have children, you understand how much time and effort that takes. Anyway, I see by the clock on the wall that it's almost time to go. Like I said, this was a short segment for this last segment. And I want to thank everybody listening, RantRadio.com, RadioPower.org. Thanks again to Ben Birch from the White Rose Society for hosting my archives. Thanks to Sock Puppet Sam, my engineer, for working so hard on everything. Those of you who understand the internet understand exactly what I mean when I say Sock Puppet Sam. I think anybody who's been around long enough knows exactly what I am talking about. But I'm going to do another show very quickly over the next day or so and get it back up on Sunday so I can be a little bit more caught up. And I apologize for not doing as many shows as I like, but, you know, hey, you know, friggin' Iggy, that's just the way it is when you do everything by yourself and you have no money. But if you want to help me out and you live in the Atlanta area, give me an email. That's joevec@bellsouth.net. Till next time, bye. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of Jove Enterprises, Incorporated.